This is Sophia Pinedo-Paddock with a commentary on Michael Chabon's Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, pages 602 to 604. I chose this passage because it marks what I think is an important breakthrough for Joe Cavalier after a decade and a half of struggling with recurrent feelings of anger and revenge. It also describes the Long Island and New York landscape in a significant and often beautiful way. This passage marks Joe's abandonment of anger in favor of calm. For most of the novel, Joe's anger towards the Nazis and Germans in general is one of his principal driving forces. Thus, he makes the escapist beat up Hitler and tries to enact revenge upon the Nazis in both his comics and in real life. His moments of calm earlier in the book, which are slightly reminiscent of what happens in this passage, are inspired by Rosa. At the height of his love for Rosa, he starts abandoning his revenge scenarios and can be found meditating on the various aspects of her body, its smells, its imperfections, and its beauty. Of course, Joe's reverie is interrupted when he, A, finds himself forgetting his own family and immersing himself too much in Rose's family, and B, his brother Thomas dies. Thus, the calm that Joe finds initially with Rosa becomes, in Joe's mind, an abandonment of his familial duty, and Joe blames that calm for his failure to save his family. And then he consequently subjects himself to this crazy penitence trip to Antarctica. A decade later, Joe finds calm that is not so shallow and tenuous in this passage. It has resulted from many years of disillusionment and hopelessness. I see this as the first time he's able to let his anger go in a permanent way, in a way that's not tormented somewhere from the bottom by feelings of guilt. Joe's drive is very meditative in this passage. He's finally able to clear his mind. We see him having no thoughts at all as a result of his calm state. He's able to be fully in the present, and he's no longer caught up in the hopelessness of the past. Joe's driving mirrors the involuntary movement of his thoughts. We find him gravitating towards the thought and driving towards the places that really mean something to him, that get him excited, which is a word that comes up a couple times in this chapter, such as the $1 million bank deposit that could be used to buy up Empire Comics. We find the reappearance of calm in this passage. We also find the reappearance of hope. That hope is the hope that his family would one day appear is finally cast as a fundamental but ineradicable falsity. Joe realizes that this very basic impulse of his is essentially absurd, which is the impulse to think that his family can finally be saved or will suddenly reappear. There is actually no hope for his family and for his teacher in Prague. But there is hope for him and his new family in New York, which is Sammy, Rosa, and Tommy. Joe has persisted in believing that his childhood home in Prague is where he belongs, that this is his real home, that he must return to. But as Bernard Kornblum reveals in his ghostly appearance later in the chapter, Joe's real home is actually back in Long Island with Sammy, Rosa, and Tommy. Joe's $1 million deposit at the East Side Stagecrafts Credit Union is the only thing still tying him to this hopeless but ineradicable conviction that his Czech family might actually reappear someday. That money, though, is actually what holds a lot of hope for his new family. Most importantly, it holds hope for Sammy. That's why the reappearance of the painful memory of this money actually allows Joe to rediscover hope and calm, and be present once more in the world. The external landscape in this passage mirrors Joe's internal feelings and realizations, so I think it's also a very important thing to talk about here. First of all, the fact that Joe is driving is reflective of the new American post-war boom lifestyle that we've all learned about in history. Driving through Long Island, Joe enjoys the suburban landscape with its fusion of highways, grasses, and night bugs sort of being representative of nature, and American radio, you know, the songs of Rosemary Clooney. The promise offered to America by the post-war boom is thus mirrored in Joe's new feelings of hope and possibility during his drive. Secondly, once he reaches the bridges leading into New York City, Joe finally admits that he's willing to let hope back into his heart. Once he crosses over the bridge, therefore, he's able to abandon the weight of his past, sort of, you know, figuratively and actually. Joe engages in a physical performance of his thoughts, therefore. In the third instance of this sort of mirroring of landscape and thoughts, Joe renders the New York landscape from his point of view as full of life and character. The sensorial landscape of Prague that Joe reminisces about in the beginning of the passage I read is being superseded by the alive and very present landscape of New York, which is his new adopted city. Well, not that new, but newer than Prague. Each bridge, the Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Queensboro bridges to be specific, is endowed with human physicality through Joe's point of view, and the city itself seems to be breathing in and out, letting out what he calls steamy exhalations. Though he's lived in New York for so long, over a decade, Joe has always rendered Empire City in his comics as a place where evil reigns and must be revenged, and because of Joe's work, he's always seen it as a temporary place. It's a place where he can make money and a place where he can somehow finally restore his life in Prague. In this scene, we can see through Joe's eyes that the city is in fact alive and full of promise within itself. I hope that we can talk more about Joe Cavalier's transformations and escapes throughout the book, of which there are many, and the role of landscape is a key to understanding what Chavin's characters are going through. So I'll see you tomorrow.